bills that you want to be heard in this committee, make sure that you get them to me, get them to John, get them to Justin here, and then we'll hear all bills. And I think I said last time, I pointed to the door as you come into this committee, leave your politics outside the door, because we are working with veterans issues, and we want to make sure that we understand that what we're doing in this committee, we're doing what's best for our veteran population, our community in Minnesota. And in fact, in 2016, we passed 18 pieces of legislation that came through this committee, and then it got into different omnibus bills, and the governor signed 18 pieces of legislation. Of course, the big one I still get calls on is thank you for getting rid of that tax and veteran pensions. We finally got rid of that. And then last session, 2017, we passed 29 pieces of legislation, and much of it came through this committee. We get them off to different other committees, and the governor signs. So, committee members, we've done a great job together. We're a team here, and we work through these different issues, and we make sure that our voices are heard, and that when people come in and testify, we ask good questions to see if this is really something we want to do for our veteran population. And with that, on Monday, March 12th, this place is going to be packed. The Capitol is going to be packed, and the State Office Building and the Senate Office Building. March 12th is the Veterans on the Hill Day, and the flyers, there's flyers in your packets. Make sure that you swing by the rotunda at 10 o'clock is when the Vets Hill Day takes effect at the Capitol. I think at 8 o'clock there's a breakfast over in the Veterans Building on the fifth floor. And the Commander's Task Force, the DAV, they are putting together a great program that they're bringing buses from all around the state of different VFWs, American Legions, different groups that are coming in to be part of the Vets Day on the Hill. And I can imagine that probably that the rotunda, the floor is going to be packed. The second level, you'll have veterans all the way around there. And then the third level, the same thing. So it's going to be a great time. And get to know the people in your communities. If you haven't visited American Legion or VFW yet in your community, make sure you find out where it is and go visit. And if you're able, if you're a veteran, become a member. The first item on the agenda is the introduction of the new Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, known as the TAG. And Major General John A. Jensen, became the TAG on November 1, 2017. Major General earned his commission from the United States Army Officer Canada School at Fort Benning, Georgia in 1989. This is going to be a quick introduction. I'm not going to go through everything, sir. Major General has served in command of staff positions in Minnesota and Iowa. Major General Jensen has commanded at all levels of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. His most recent assignment was the commanding general of the 34th Infantry. Major General Jensen was deployed in support of Operation Desert Spring in Kuwait, Operation Joint Forge in Bosnia, and Operation Iraqi Freedom. Major General Jensen's full bio is in your folder. You can take a look at that, and with copies on the table for the public. Major General Jensen, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As introduced, Major General John Jensen, the 31st Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Military Affairs. Sir, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to come before this committee and introduce myself, as well as on behalf of the 13,000 soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota National Guard. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the fellow committee members for your support of our veterans, your support of our service members, and your support of our families. This committee has led many efforts to support and recognize the contributions made by our veterans, our service members, and our families. And the Minnesota National Guard looks forward to continuing to work with you and continuing to partner with you on many of these initiatives. The Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Military Affairs is a large enterprise of 13,000 soldiers and airmen. In fiscal year 2017, the Minnesota National Guard exceeded $500 million in total economic impact for the first time ever. Our infrastructure resides in over 60 communities in every corner of the state. We'll remain a statewide, geographically dispersed force during my tenure as the Adjutant General. I guarantee that. Our strength comes from our ability to recruit statewide among all of our citizens and across all of our communities. Since 2002, we've deployed over 26,000 soldiers and airmen, and another 1,500 will be deployed this year. Your Minnesota National Guard remains globally engaged, whether that's United States CENTCOM, United States European Command, Pacific Command, Northern Command, as well as with our state partner, Croatia, and our bilateral partner, Norway. I believe the two key contributors to the Minnesota National Guard are first and foremost our people, our soldiers, our airmen, and our families. And our soldiers, our airmen, and our families deserve the best, and it's my job to deliver this. The second key contributing enabler to the Minnesota National Guard are our relationships and our partnerships. We can't be successful by ourselves. I can't provide the best to our deserving soldiers and airmen without partnerships and relationships. And we have many great state and federal partners, and this committee is just one of those great partners. So thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to introduce myself as well as present our bonding bill. At this time, sir, I would be welcome to any questions you or your fellow committee members may have.
Yeah, thank you, sir. And Representative, yes?
Major General Jensen, I was just wondering, what great city do you reside in?
Madam Representative, Apple Valley.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Representative Leash. Lesh.
How many years have you served with me, Mr. Chair?
Hey.
That's right. Okay.
First meeting.
Thank you, Mr.
Meeting.
Chair. It's okay.
What's your rank?
I'm retired. My rank is retired. I retired as a captain. Thank you. General Jensen, can you tell me what is the average training days per year that Minnesota M-Day soldiers currently train for now, on average, in the Minnesota National Guard?
Mr. Representative, that's, and Mr. Chairman, a great question. While I can't give you the exact number of days, what we have seen is over the course of a global war of terrorism and continuing today, it's much greater than what we traditionally believe a reserve component soldier will serve. Traditionally, we believe that's 2 days a month and 2 weeks a summer, but we've greatly exceeded that across many of our forces, not only as a result of deployments, but also as a result of critical exercises that we're now a part of. And so we can get that exact data to you, Mr. Chairman, as well as to the whole committee to give you that.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate that, General. And it has been one of the primary concerns of mine, and I will say that when I enlisted because of the global war on terror, so it's not as though I got a bait and switch or anything. But I did see over the course of those years since my enlistment decisions made above your pay grade that decided that reserve components were going to play a lot heavier role and rotate our soldiers into positions that were traditionally full-time active duty positions. And the downstream effects that has on the soldiers that I serve with and my constituents in terms of employment strike me as pretty onerous. And I think that they're bearing that burden very well. But it continues to be a concern of mine. So when we talk about support for employer support of the Guard and Reserve programs, those are very important. The impacts of the family law changes we have to do when more soldiers are getting divorced upon rotating home. We deal with those in those committee too. So I am very concerned about that. I understand the realities of it, that decisions like that are made at the Pentagon. There's not much you can do about it, but we see those impacts a lot in this committee, and so I hope you'll keep that in mind.
Thank you, sir.
General, any comments on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I appreciate the support and the comments, because that is exactly right. And it gets to the critical partnerships that we have across Minnesota. We don't have a large base, large fort, large post here in Minnesota. So we are really dependent upon our communities to provide much of that support. And I know all of the committee members are very familiar with our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon network and the key contribution that that network provides our family members and our soldiers. We are very concerned about employers being able to continue to support the high operational tempo that our soldiers and airmen face every year. As a result, we are beginning to shift some of our focus in Yellow Ribbon strictly to employer support. This year, on April 23rd, Mr. Chairman, we're going to host a Yellow Ribbon employer conference where we hope that that the Chief of the National Guard Bureau will come out and speak to some of our key employer companies from across the state to, first of all, thank them for the support that they have provided our soldiers and airmen over the last 16 years, but also to continue to encourage them to continue to provide that support.
Mr. Chair, can I say one more? Yes,
Representative Lesh. I just wanted to add to that, those additional training days, we can be proud of some components of those that we've achieved, too. When I was with 2 of the 135, we went through JRTC down to Louisiana. Some people remember it as the old Louisiana maneuvers started under Eisenhower. And we, my battalion, 2 of the 135, best battalion in the Minnesota National Guard, in case anyone's wondering, came in the top 5%. And I think, General, you're a former commander of 2 of the 135, weren't you?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Well, your work has paid off because we came through as the top 5% of any unit to go through that training, and this includes all units that are full-time. So while the training is onerous, sometimes we get some gems out of that, too. To have a reserve component come through in the top 5% of that training, which is a rigorous training, JRTC is, it's something that all Minnesotans can be proud of. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just a point of Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, you know, that leadership at the top. I know Governor Plenty and his wife Mary brought this into being. And I know back after 9/11, I was deployed for 2 years, for 20 months, right after 9/11. And at that time, there was no family support for the reserve component. You know, I was reserve, and there was no family support groups at all. My wife had to start one in our local American Legion. So Minnesota's come a long way in supporting its troops, and especially coming back from the warfare and sending them off, and also getting counties and communities and businesses organized to support these families when the men and women have left their families for a year or more. So Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to continue maybe a little discussion of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. I'm a member locally with our Rotary group, sponsors it in Eden Prairie. And I'm interested in more information about April 23rd, you said it was, the connection with employers. Is that something you can forward to the committee and we could get distributed to people?
Yes, yes, ma'am, absolutely. We will make that information available to this committee.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for General Jensen? If not, General, thank you for coming in. And we're going to kind of skip, change directions here. We're going to start listening to some of the bills. And then Don Kerr will be coming back. And I know, General Jensen, I'm sure you got a busy schedule. You're welcome to stay and listen in on what's going on and some of the bills that we're going to be authoring here.
So. Mr. Chairman, if I did that, then why would I have Don Kerr, right?
That's right.
thank you, and again, thanks to the entire committee. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. The first bill on the agenda is House File 2908, and I will move House File 2908 before the committee, and that has been referred to the Committee on Transportation Policy Committee. So, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wills, thank you to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Yes, if you'll humor me, I just need to plug in my laptop.
Okay.
I decided instead of printing out several copies of a photograph or two, we'll save the paper and ink.
Okay. So. And there's no other testifiers, correct?
Not today, no.
Okay.
But while this is booting up, so.
While we're, are you set up already?
Because I can. Technical.
While we're setting up, in your packet, members, the DAV is putting together some information that during the Vets on the Hill, there's going to be free parking area and park and ride, and Osseo American Legion, Bloomington VFW, Anoka American Legion, and in Roseville VFW, there's some free parking rides there, and also the Greater Minnesota buses. There's going to be buses coming from St. Cloud area, Wilmer area, Rochester area, Preston, Zumbrota, Rochester, South Central Bus, Springfield, New Ulm, Mankato, St. Peter, Northeast Bus, Duluth, Cloquet, Haskove, and Aitken area bus. So there's buses come from all over, and also Montevideo area bus and Bemidji are sending buses. So we're going to have men and women coming in from all over the state for this day at Vets on the Hill, and they're going to also have regional rooms. So if you can read that material over, you'll be able to go. Metro area would be in rooms 317A and 316 in the Capitol Building. For those counties, southeast and south central areas is 1 and 9. There's a map there for you, too. In room 300, north of the state office building, for those counties, southwest area, western, northwest area, and northeast and north central area. So there's going to be rooms set up for the veterans to go. And basically, you can just go to those rooms and talk to your constituents, talk to your veterans.
Okay.
We are ready to go. Please proceed. And please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm impressed with your ability to be efficient with your time there. So thank you for your patience as I set up the PowerPoint here. I'm Anna Wills. I'm the state representative in Apple Valley, Rosemont, and Coates. And today I have a bill to rename a bridge in my district in memory of Warrant Officer Dennis A. Groth. And you'll see the photo on the screen is Dennis. And I'm going to give a little bit of a story and background in his life and the sacrifice he made for our country and why I believe it's important to rename the bridge in his honor. So Dennis A. Groth was born on January 21st, 1947, to Henry and Alice Groth on the family farm in rural Rosemount, which is located on Blaine Avenue about a half mile north of County Road 42. Dennis was baptized and confirmed at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church, located at the corner of Blaine Avenue and County Road 42. He graduated from Rosemount High School in 1965. Dennis joined the Army in 1967 and became a dust-off pilot, picking up wounded soldiers. I have another photo here. Wounded soldiers and flying them to the nearest medical facility. If you're not familiar with what a dust crew is, it consists of four people, two pilots, a medic, and a crew chief. Usually one pilot would fly the helicopter while the other would act as the aircraft commander. Dennis and his crew died shortly after dropping off a wounded soldier in the early morning hours of October 19, 1968, when his helicopter went down in unknown circumstances near Sauk Trang, Vietnam. He was only 21 years old. Dennis's brother, Jerry, contacted my office recently to request dedicating this bridge on Highway 52 at County Road 42 in Rosemount in his memory. Dennis is buried at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church Cemetery, about 1 mile west of the bridge that we're hoping to dedicate in his memory. Dennis and Jerry grew up with their family in rural Rosemount, and their nephew lives in Rosemount and still farms at the family farm. Their mother is still alive and living in Cannon Falls. She's 92 years old. This year, October 19th, will be the 50th anniversary of Dennis's death. and I ask for your support on this legislation to rename the bridge at Highway 52 and County Road 42 in his memory. So I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Representative Mills. Are there any questions from the committee for Representative Wills? Anyone from the audience would like to make any comments? Okay. Representative Wills, are any closing remarks?
I appreciate your time and attention, and I must have sold the bill on you guys because you had no questions. So, but I know you're going to have a lot of bills come before your committee, so I do appreciate your consideration as you weigh out what's going to go into your bills and but move forward. So hopefully this will be included.
I think if any of us have watched any videos that in terms of the Vietnam War, especially the specialties that was done last year and the sacrifice that many of our men and women had to experience during that war, and also especially our helicopters. You know, if you've been watching any of the videos and things that are dealing with that war, that service, the helicopters, provided a lot of life-saving trips for our men and women on the battlefield. So I think this would be a good bill to move forward, and yes.
Mr. Chair, you reminded me, as you were mentioning that, a point that I neglected to mention is that these helicopters were unarmed, which was unfortunate.
Right. Okay, the Chair renews his motion that the House File 2908 will be referred to Transportation Policy Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2908 is referred to the Transportation Policy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
I just have a quick question. I don't know. These bills don't seem to have the correct bill number on them. Is there a reason for that?
We'll get that corrected. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. The next bill is on our agenda is 2869. I will move 2869. Filed before the committee, and that it would be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. And Representative Howe, please tell us about your first. Introduce yourself and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm Representative Jeff Howe. I hope that some of the folks actually know me. This bill actually introduces National Guard soldiers to the state-sponsored life insurance program. Sponsored life insurance program, otherwise known as SSLI, is a life insurance program exclusively for the National Guard members. And it's provided through the National Guard Association of Minnesota. What it does is I'm going to list off six things that this life insurance program does. One, it provides all members of the Minnesota National Guard with a $1,000 no-cost life insurance benefit at no cost. And that's important, but the real issue is a lot of soldiers don't know this benefit exists, and they don't fill the paperwork out to actually obtain it. Number two, it's a low-cost life insurance program with a no-war exclusion or aviation exclusion. If you know anything about normal life insurance, it always comes with an exclusion for war and an exclusion for aviation. So this doesn't have that, which is very important for National Guard members. Three, it has year-round continuous coverage regardless of duty status. So even though you may not be on active duty status and you might be in your regular job during the month, this will continue to provide coverage. It actually provides, you can actually pick up coverage for your spouse and your dependents. Number five, it's a guaranteed life insurance with no change in coverage or cost when a National Guard member separates from service. This one hits home to me because I just separated, not realizing I should have picked this up before I got out.
And so I lost all my life insurance that I had through the National Guard, which means I had to go out, go through physicals. I had to go get find life insurance when I could have picked this up before I got out, and it would have just continued. And number six, new members get $10,000 worth of coverage with if they fill out the paperwork within the first 120 days. They get that $10,000 worth of coverage for the first year they're in. The problem is Minnesota had no new members sign up for this benefit last year. And that's why this bill is important, because this bill authorizes the TAG, who you just met, to provide the SSLI program, provide a benefit instruction or actually introduce it to them and allow them to fill that paperwork out. Otherwise, there was always some thought that there was something that prohibited them from being able to provide this introductory information to them. This bill authorizes him to provide that sometime during the year when the training schedule allows it. Doesn't require him to take the insurance. It just provides that the TAG can allow this to happen. That's the short version, and I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Again, this will only apply to National Guard, not any other reserve components. Am I correct?
You're correct. Mr. Chair, it only applies to National Guard members.
Okay. And secondly, you mentioned first 1,000 is covered, and then if you want to purchase more, you can purchase more after that. Am I correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's exactly right.
Okay. So, are there any other questions from the committee? Okay. Any closing remarks, Representative Hall?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that it's very important to get this out there so members have the opportunity and the information to make the decisions that could affect them on the rest of their life and provide that protection for their families if something unforeseen does happen. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. And the chair renews the motion. House File 2869 be referred to the Commerce Policy Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and will be referred. File 2869 will be referred to Commerce. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I had a quick question for Representative Howe. You know, I forgot about this, Representative Howe, but when I left, I lost my SGLI, right? $400,000, whatever, $27 a month, sweet deal. And my SSLI was taken directly out of my pay, which I don't get anymore, and I forgot to re-up. Am I SOL on the SSLI?
Representative Howell?
Or can I get that back again or what?
Representative Lash, I don't know. I'm not an insurance agent, and any guidance I'd give you would probably get me in trouble.
Okay. Thank you.
But I'm sure the National Guard Association would be open to having that discussion to see if you could. It hasn't been that long.
No, it hasn't.
Thank you, Representative Howell. Next bill on the agenda for the committee is House File 2907, and the reviser number is changed. It's 185842. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. And I will move House File 2907 before the committee, and that it will be referred to the Civil Law Committee. Representative Howe, please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you remember last year, we had a bill come through that allowed disabled veterans with 70% or more not to have to fill out the application for reduced homestead market exclusion. So if you were disabled veterans 70% to 90% receive a $150,000 reduction on their home property value. Those with 100% disability get 300,000 market exclusion. What this was supposed to do is relieve some pressure on county assessor's office from sending over, from contacting this, these disabled vets to get them to make that application, because in, I know the county that I live in, they send out the first notice that they have to apply for this. They had to apply for this every year. So whether anything changed or not. So if they first send out a letter, the assessor's office sends out a letter for to notify them that they have to do it. If they don't do it within a month, they send out another letter. And if they don't respond to that letter, they actually call them. So I was asked by the county to say, can we make this so it doesn't have to happen every year? So last year, the bill allowed them to just apply when something changed. If the disability rating changed, if their marital status changed, if they moved and their location changed. If something changed, they needed to reapply. Well, we thought that was good until this year. Now someone decided that the exchange of Social Security information and some of the other data between the assessor's office and the Veterans Service Office, the CVSO, that they needed an authorization to exchange that information, even though they've been doing it for decades. So I'm not saying it was right what they did in the past, but... So now we've identified that this may be a problem because we're exchanging information. So what this bill does is allow the county veteran service officer and the assessor's officer, the assessor's office, to exchange that information for purposes of determining eligibility for the homestead market exclusion. So basically that's what this does. And I'll stand for questions.
Any questions?
Yes. May Quill.
Thank you, Representative, or Chair Detmer. Representative Howe, I just have a few questions. I did constituent services work for veterans for a member of Congress for a number of years, and so we always had to have a privacy release form signed in order to send information on to various federal agencies. And I do understand the issue that this seeks to clear up. I worry about just blanket authorizing exchange of data, even if it's been happening before. I mean, have you talked to other veterans or what? I'm just nervous about opening that up to not having that privacy release form or directly authorizing that sharing of information.
Representative Howe?
Well, we have, this is, I guess I see it that if they don't want to share that information, they don't have to apply for the exclusion and just raise their taxes. If it's just authorization, because the veteran service officer already has that information, the assessor already has that information, so that both of them already have the information. This just allows them to verify that, yes, this is them, this is the benefit that they're allowed to have, and they can verify that disability rating with the federal database. So, you know, they both already have that information. This just allows them to link up and verify that the list that they have and the amount of disability is all correct. Otherwise, both the assessor has the information, the county veteran service officer has the information. This just allows that discussion to look at their paperwork and say, yeah, that's the person, that's the Social Security number, that's the disability rating he has, and or he or she has, and that's the market exclusion that they get.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be different, I think, if one or the other didn't have that data, but they already have the data.
Okay. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Chairman Detmer. And that's helpful. Could there be possibly a word added into the bill that would specify that it would be solely to determine a client's eligibility, or that they're exchanging it solely for that purpose?
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mayquaid. If you look at lines 1.20 and 1.21, I believe that that's what it's. If you look at from 1.18, which is already there, the new language 1.20 and 1.21, and then if you look up at 1.10 and 1.12, I think that is basically what it says, is just to determine the client's eligibility. It's not for any other purpose.
Yes. Any other questions?
Yes. Representative?
Breyer.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. I'm wondering, Representative Howe, are there other situations where we have a benefit that veterans should be receiving, but you have to go through the county service office to get to verify disability and things like that? And does this pop out because we hadn't written it correctly to begin with, or might this be a problem in other situations too?
Representative Howe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor, I don't know if there's other situations out there. I actually, you know, the county brought this to me, and then the first I got to become aware of that there was a data privacy issue was after that bill was passed. So it was news to me, so this is why we're coming back to it. Whether there's other situations out there, the county veteran service officer or the county, someone would have to bring that up. I'll be far from an expert on how the process is all supposed to work with veteran service officers and benefits.
And members, remember, you know, where this bill is going. It's going to civil law, so I'm sure that there will be any other type of issues that might come up with this.
Data privacy, I'm sure.
That will come out there, yeah. Well, thank you, Representative Howe. Any closing remark? Was there a question over here? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Since Representative Lush and I actually serve on the Civil Law Committee, we were doing a little quick sidebar and realizing that most of those issues we just discussed, which you just reiterated, will be dealt with in civil law. And we are a different committee, and we have to remember that we have different lanes and different jurisdictions. And so we will, I'm sure, fully vet that. But as we read the plain language, it looked pretty tight from what we can see, but we'll look at it more in okay. civil law. But just know that it's got another committee staff.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have someone that from would like to, audience would like to make some comments.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and we wholeheartedly support this. I'm a prime example of this. I'm a combat disabled Vietnam veteran, and I had a 70% disability, and I live in Ramsey County, and I thought it would be just no sweat to go down there and get that changed. Well, that was a mistake on my part. I had to go back and forth about 3 months, go back and forth trying to verify exactly what was going on, and dealing with the county veteran service officers, they're part of our United Veterans Legislative Council. They're backing this because it's an easier way for them than to go back and forth between the two entities and get it taken care of. That's the whole thing, is we want to make it easier for these gentlemen and ladies who have that disability can get it. And it is good that Representative Howe is doing this because it just clarifies it and makes it easier. I wouldn't have to go back and forth for 3 months, and then I thought, if it's 4 months, you're screwed, and it's gone. You can't do it. So that's the important part.
Well, I think, Representative Howe, it's not only good for the veteran, the men and women that are having to go through this process, but it's also great for the counties and the county service officers. It just cuts back on the workload there too. Absolutely. From what I understand,
it reduces paperwork and cost to the counties, which That's is right. all of our tax dollars.
Well, thank you, and Mr. Kaiser, thank you for sharing that. Representative Howe, any closing remarks?
No, I just would ask for your support, and I'm sure that this will be extremely vetted at the data privacy in civil law. So. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, the chair renews his motion on the House File 2907 be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The House File 2907 is re-referred to Civil Law. And the next bill on the agenda is my bill, House File 2788. Vice Chair Bliss will be taking over the gavel. And the reviser number, again, is changed to, updated to 18-5505.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill before the committee and have and that it be re-referred to the Education Policy Committee?
Thank you. I move my bill.
Chair Detmer, your bill is before us. I understand you also have an author's amendment titled A1. Would you like to move adoption of your amendment?
Yes, House File 2788, I have the A1 amendment. I'd like to move that. There's some just clarifying some language that's in the bill, and this was brought to my attention this past week, so I wanted to make sure that this got changed before we sent it off to the next committee.
Does everyone have a copy of the A1 amendment? Are there any questions on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Chair Detmer, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think you know over the years I've been keeping an open mind about veterans' issues. And this past interim, I was approached by the recruiting command and about some issues going on in the state regarding military recruiters from any branch coming into the our K-12 education facilities, our schools, being able during college fairs and being able to set up and answer questions about the military services. And as you know, I was an educator for 34 years at Forest Lake High School, and this was never an issue. In fact, recruiters would come down to me and talk to me, and they would bring in their staff during the college fairs where all the different colleges were brought in. And they would set up tables talking about whether it's the academies, the Army, Navy, Air Force academies, Coast Guard, and all the different branches would come in and be able to be there just to answer questions from students. So when this was brought to my attention that there's been some maybe a pushback on allowing recruiters into our schools, I thought it'd be better to maybe approach that from a legislative point of view just to support schools and support our students that are being educated in our public schools and our charter schools, that allowing access to these schools that would give students a better idea what the service in our military is all about and be able to ask questions. So with that, I have Captain Young here from the United States Army and Major Andrew Nicholson from the United States Marine Corps. They would like to just share and talk about why we have this going forward. So, and the captain, the good captain here, was the first one that came into my office during the interim.
Thank you, Mr.
Captain, can you please state your name for the record, please?
Captain Young Yoon.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members, ladies and gentlemen in the audience. I'm Captain Yoon, the company commander of Army Recruiting Operations here in the Twin Cities area. I have with me my senior enlisted advisor, First Sergeant Baker. We'd like to thank you all here today for the opportunity to discuss the need for the proposed bill. Because currently of today's societal challenges, the nation's Army is finding difficulties in maintaining an all-volunteer force, which has serious implications to not only our nation's security, but also our local communities here in Minnesota. We attribute our difficulties to four main factors. The first one, there exists a knowledge gap in our youth of the military career options. The second, the media's linear portrayal of the military. The third, there's unqualified applicants because of low aptitude test scores such as the ASVAB, physical limitations or moral issues such as criminal offenses, and unemployment rate being at 4.5%. I'll elaborate on the first three with data from the DOD and the Department of the Army. The first factor, the knowledge gap in our youth. There is only 1% currently in the U.S. population currently serving, and only 7% has served at one point in their life. A recent survey taken by the DOD reported that currently 50% of our youth admitted they know little to nothing about the military career options. Moreover, there has been a 35% decline in veteran population. We believe the downward trends in our veteran population, coupled with the small force of Americans currently serving, will cause wider knowledge gap for the next generation of our youth. The second factor with media. The media portrays the military as gunslinging Rambos, which is misperceptions of the full spectrum that the military truly encompasses. We have over 200 careers that range from JAG lawyers, nurses, military policemen, engineers, project managers, to dog handlers. We believe the high school educators and counselors can help us disabuse this misconceived perception towards the military imposed by the media. The third factor regarding unqualified applicants. We believe that adding Armed Forces career options as a career pathway for high school students will help some students do better in high school and stay out of trouble. Not every student finds a calling with going to college immediately after high school, nor working menial jobs lacking higher purpose. And for those who find a passion or calling to serve in uniform during their high school education, those students may try harder to maintain good grades in order to graduate to serve, and more importantly, stay out of trouble and become law-abiding citizens to join our ranks. In sum, what we would like to envision is our Minnesotan educators, counselors, and students to be better informed of the full spectrum of the Army's capabilities and its available career options. We believe that our future workforce needs to know all the opportunities that they have available to them. After high school, there are three routes students can take. It's college, work, or technical, and the Army can provide all three. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain. Chair Detmer, your next testifier.
We got Major Andrew Nicholson, United States Marine Corps.
Mr. Chairman, committee, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for this opportunity. Major Andrew Nicholson, I'm the recruiting station commanding officer for the Marine Corps, which encompasses not only the state of Minnesota, but also the state of South Dakota, North Dakota, and a good part of Wisconsin. So I have a great opportunity to see across state and be able to compare how Minnesota is doing with our recruiting efforts. Just like to remind everybody, the Marine Corps is our Marine Corps, and it's an honor for me to serve and represent you as you're one of your most senior Marines in the state of Minnesota. So I did have a slide presentation. I don't know if we have access to that.
Do you have it on a laptop?
I did send it to Mr. Holquist.
There we go. All right, check. It's coming up.
If we could, sir, I'm sorry. The slide. I said to Mr. Holquist.
Members, there's also a copy of it in your packet.
Okay, great. So if you could just flip to the mission statement slide. And I think, generally speaking, most people understand the mission of the Marine Corps as to win our nation's battles. However, I want to draw light to two other missions that the Marine Corps does have. You know, the first being we make Marines, and we make Marines at our recruit depots in San Diego, California, and Parris Island, South Carolina. Your fine young and women from this state will be going to San Diego. And, you know, first, before we make Marines, we have to find Marines. And that's the challenging part of this duty is finding Marines. And I'll get into examples of that here soon.
Just continue.
If you have your slides. So.
Yeah. Major, if you just want to continue, we all have copies.
Okay, great. Our second mission, obviously, is to win our nation's battles. Okay, and you know, Marine Corps, by and large, we do a great job of that. Okay, thirdly, which I think I want to draw the most attention to, is we return quality citizens to the U.S. In this case, as we enlist your youth or commission your youth out of Minnesota, they are coming back. And as you can see across this room right now, there are service members, past service members, that are back doing great things in the state of Minnesota. Okay. So the next slide is the slide with the U.S. broken down by propensity to serve by state. I think this is a very impactful slide. And when I first received orders here to Minnesota, it's one of the first things I want to look at. What am I walking into? Well, I'll tell you, I think I was shocked, and probably you all are shocked as well, to see that propensity to serve In the state of Minnesota, it's significantly lower than most of the other states. Okay, only one other state across the U.S. has a lower propensity. Not saying Minnesota's not patriotic, because I'll tell you, I've lived in lots of states, and this, by and large, is one of the most patriotic states I've seen. But for some reason, the general youth does not want to serve. Okay, a lot of reasons to that, anecdotally, is basis. You know, active duty bases in the state of Minnesota, zero. Okay, zero. The Marines have two reserve bases on Fort Snelling, and that's about it. So our challenge in the state of Minnesota is more difficult than other states that have just the exposure to the military. But it does give you perspective of how we're doing as a state and with the people that is serving. So the question I think we all want to know is, how do we increase this propensity? And that's a question I've been trying to figure out for the last 18 months on this duty. Okay, and I think the bill that the representative here wants to get at is can precisely help us increase propensity. Because propensity to serve starts in high schools. Okay, it starts in high schools when they're most impressionable, and they have to make one of the hardest decisions in their life, you know, a student. So there is a direct correlation, I believe, in the propensity to serve across the state with our access to high schools and how well we're doing educating our youth in the high schools regarding the military. Any questions on this slide?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, so is this specifically for the Marines, or is this all branches?
This is all branches, ma'am.
This is all branches. Okay. Yes, I know we have a pretty strong Army Reserve and National Guard here.
Now, I don't think this takes in consideration the National Guard, but active duty branches, so Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and Army.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think our Red Bulls are probably not represented here because we've got quite a few Red Bulls. So.
Yeah, I personally know several, so yeah, we have a good representation from the state there.
And that's not surprising to me the least bit, because the National Guard is the Marine Corps' biggest competitor of finding the most qualified youth to serve.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Major. When I was with my light infantry unit, I swear, like 15% of our formation was former Marines. So we draw a lot from you. Thank you for sending them our way. But I'd also add that it's, you know, I get that. I get, you know, you want active duty folks. We need active duty folks. We need full-time standing a military. But because of that lack of active duty posts, the robust nature of the National Guard here has just kind of taken over. And I imagine it would be extremely hard to compete, because this is a relationship business, right? It's word of mouth, who you meet and everything. And if there's already a line in to someone they see going to work in a uniform, that's going to make a big difference. But I would note also that some of your best recruitment comes from people coming out of National Guard or Reserve components as well, right? I mean, they're already set up to do it, I can imagine. I know maybe not Marines, but I know Army. You know, when I'll go through, a lot of people say, well, I want to go active duty. So I don't know if the numbers take that into consideration either. Maybe they don't.
Yes, sir. We do receive a fair portion of our – I'm sorry, not even fair. Probably just a handful. And I'm speaking in terms of maybe 10 out of about the 400 we enlist into the Marine Corps out of the state of Minnesota. Probably 10. And it's speculative, of course, but probably 10 come from prior service National Guard. So not many.
I would add too, I know you have a Marine Reserve unit here too, as well. You have a Marine Reserve unit here in Minnesota, am I correct?
Major Nicholson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, sir. We have two reserve units on Fort Snelling.
Okay. And the only reason I knew Marines had a reserve component is a couple of my birds blew over their biffies when they were doing on a range up at Camp Ripley a couple of summers ago, and I had to apologize to the Marines because my helicopters blew over their biffies.
I'm sure.
No one was in them at the time, I'd point out. But.
Major?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to point out as well that the active duty is not for everybody. Military service is not for everybody. But I think what this bill gets after is given the students the right education to make a decision on their own with the right information. And I think that's where we're lacking currently, is our ability to get in front of students, educate the students so they can make an educated decision on what to do after high school. So, Mr. Chair, if we have no other questions, can we please turn to the state of the market slide?
Go ahead.
So I'd like to point out this first sub-bullet, marketing should focus on getting youth in the district more familiar with what it means to serve in the Marine Corps. So this is a DOD-wide report that gets sent out by district. And this is a study that occurs at the DOD level. So this bill that Representative Detmer is putting forth will give us the opportunity to educate the youth again and get access to them. So currently what we see in high schools is we have access on a monthly, sometimes quarterly basis, and access usually means coming in for a lunchroom setup or a class talk during classes. So there's competing requirements as we see it going into high schools. As we can all remember in high school, you don't want to give up your lunch to go talk to a recruiter. You certainly don't want to give up PE to go talk to a recruiter. We also see disparities across access in high schools in the state of Minnesota based on school districts. So school districts writ large decide what access we have, and we see disparities between school districts. Some open access, some very restrictive access. The second bullet is messaging should focus on clarifying day-to-day life and the quality of life benefits. This is where I think the bill gets after educating the counselors. I like to call it educate the educators. And we don't do a great job of that, because currently the counselors, really the bridge out of high school into the civilian world, are selling two main things as I talk to counselors. They're selling workforce or they're selling college. And if students do not have the grades or they can't afford a university, they go to community college. And I think educating the counselors, having them more informed about what the military is and the benefits of joining the military will go a long way for us. Just to my last slide with questions, Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Are there any questions for the testifiers? I just want to say thank you very much for the work that you all do. And I know for a fact there was a younger version of myself that needed a little direction. I was a farm kid and not many educational opportunities for me. And the recruiters pointed me in the direction, and I got some the direction and training I needed to become a high-tech professional. So I really do appreciate the work you do, and thank you.
Sir.
Representative Lesh, you had a question for the testifiers again?
Well, I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I see Mr. Michael coming up here, so I'll hold off till then.
Thank you. And Representative Rosenthal.
I'll hold off.
All right. And we have, thank you, gentlemen, and we have another testifier, Dr. Susan Larson. If you want to step up to the podium.
Now I would have to apologize to the committee. I'm not a high-tech person here. We didn't get the slides off, so.
We'll forgive you this time, Chair.
That's fine.
And can you please state your name, please, for the record?
Yes, sir. I'm Dr. Susan Larson. I'm a resident of Ramsey County. I'm also the education specialist for the active Army and Reserve. And I would like to address the education gap for our school counselors. And also to note that we are behind our sister states such as North Dakota, Colorado, Ohio, and Indiana in this area where they are requiring
education. Dr. Larson, if I can interrupt you for just 1 second, just this is being referred to the Education Committee after this.
Oh, very good.
Okay.
But I would also say, as the liaison for the Army in these schools, I find counselors with lamentably low levels of knowledge and experience. And we find that really students are not ready for a full range of choices. And I'd like to support this bill being referred to the Education Committee exactly for that reason, because I'm speaking with educators every day, and they simply don't know the options that are out there for every branch of service. And that's the other point, is to bring in not just one recruiter, but to open up all of the opportunities for all of our students. Thank you.
Are there any questions for this testifier? Any other questions for this testifier? Representative May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Larson, so you talked a little bit about how counselors have limited knowledge, and I'm looking when it comes to the armed forces, and I'm looking at this bill, and it says a counselor must present and explain the career opportunities. Do you see if counselors have a low knowledge and maybe they don't take continuing ed in learning some of this, do you see the low knowledge then must having to tell students about this translating into misinformation?
I think there's an excellent opportunity for education at the through the Minnesota School Counselors Association presentations, which would address all of our secondary and even middle school counselors at that point. As it currently stands, I think it would be a challenge for most of our counselors to present in an informed and balanced manner all of the opportunities. The primary misconception being that if you serve in the military, you will not attend college. In fact, the majority of people we put into my branch have college credit coming into the Army, and through our CONAP program are required to start the college admissions process.
Representative McQuaid.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up, we have a very high student-to-counselor ratio in Minnesota. Has that played into some of the ability or lack thereof for counselors to kind of present the full breadth of options?
Absolutely. Okay. That's a huge challenge. Counselors have a hard time getting through just the basics. Mm-hmm. But if we are to believe the current statistics put out by Gallup, that only 36% of college students feel that college will prepare them for the world of work and careers, I truly see that we have a lot of work to do in encouraging our counselors to get students ready for the world of work, both after college, through the workforce, and with the possibility of military service.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Larson. And we have another testifier stepping up here. And if you could please keep your comments to the Veterans Affairs, and remember that this is being referred to the Educational Committee.
Sure. Thank you.
And state your name for the record, please.
Sure. Tom Diamond. And my comments will be personal, as you see me with representing an organization a lot of the times. But just we have not had a chance to look at this collectively because it just came out. And I'm also at the disadvantage that the A1 amendment was not available online and is not available at the meeting, so I haven't seen that. But based on what was available, I'd like to speak to this. First of all, I'll say I'm a veteran, and I'm honored to have served. But I would strongly encourage you to look at the principles that we so often talk about, those about that were best to have decisions made at the local level, and we also should not force unfunded mandates onto our local level. This bill does both of them. I'd also like to mention that I'm old enough to know why this is the way it is. This comes out of great conversations that we had as a community throughout our towns and cities throughout the state about whether they wanted the school district's role to serve as a recruiter for the Department of Defense. We can agree or disagree on that issue, but I think that's an important issue that ought to be considered here. If we're talking about public service and we're trying to encourage our young members of Minnesota, that's a whole different category. There are all sorts of opportunities, Peace Corps, various health programs that around the world, would be health, teaching, the CDC, that help people around the world and provide a great representation of what this country stands for around the world, but also within this country in areas that do not have the resources to provide the health, the housing, and food that people need. One of the things, and this does not require anything except it requires that advocacy for the Department of Defense, but not any other public role. What about career diplomats? That's an important thing. And it puts the burden on the school districts. I live in St. Paul. I live in a very diverse neighborhood. There's great demands on our school system. We nearly had the school district shut down because of the tussle to try and come to a resolution on how to provide the services for the students that they needed within the budget limitations that they had. And one of the things that the Federation of Teachers advocated for was counselors, because they have been cut horribly in the effort to try and balance budgets. And so this then takes that away from the school district, because now it dedicates part of that time to a specific purpose for training. They have to get training. They have to. They're required, mandated in this legislation to take time to do this. That may be appropriate, but that should be decided at the local level, whether that is what is more important in that counseling session or other careers that are more fitting for the individual as they know those students. Because right now, we don't have the resources to do everything. And so I would strongly urge you to keep the decision-making at the local level and to keep the options for the counselors to look at all the possibilities for their students that they're helping so they can guide them in the best direction that works for them. Thank you.
Representative Lesh, you had a question?
Well, I just thank you for your testimony, Mr. Diamond. I know you. We've worked together. I just need to disagree with you. And I understand your point on this. But folks, remember that in the immediate aftermath and during World War II, it was nearly 20% of our nation that wore the uniform of their country, okay? At one time or another, everyone participated in the nation's common defense. And the reason for that, why we relied on recruits or a draft, goes back to England, where we didn't maintain a large standing army because it was a threat to the government, and also because everyone would have to participate in the nation's common defense. And now, when we have less than 1% of America serving, we are in danger of a substantial military-civilian gap and a lack of understanding of the civilian population, what the military does. And that endangers both the military and, I think, civilians. We need to have people rotate in and rotate out. And if we don't take an active stance in encouraging that, we run the risk of driving that wedge even further into the civilian-military divide. And when that happens, you get a permanent military class, you get a permanent civilian class, and countries like that we've seen in history don't remain free, I think. It's just my opinion. And so I understand where you're coming from. I absolutely do. But from what I've seen in my time in service, I think we need more people to rotate through to understand what the military is about. And I remember in my high school, I remember Osseo High School. I remember we had military on one side of the hallway, and you probably remember this, Mr. Diamond, why this was, but I didn't get it at the time in high school, but we had the military recruiter on one side, and down the hall on the other side there was this aging hippie selling swag with like peace buttons and stuff, and a bunch of us bought that stuff. We thought it was cool and everything. And I think it was an effort by the school board to provide, you know, to contrasting opinions, because that wasn't too far in the wake of Vietnam, where there was a lot of anger over the role of the military. But after my time in, I sincerely believe that the military can be better helped, be better made accountable by the civilian population when more civilians rotate through and therefore have a stake in what the military is doing. And then I think that keeps our nation more accountable and more free. Just my opinion, but I respect yours as well.
Mr. Diamond?
Yes, if I could just respond. I don't disagree. I would point out is that focusing on this as the reason why we are having trouble enlisting, and if you've heard the issues that were raised, I would suggest does not illustrate the full picture. I would argue that things such as the endless wars that this country is in with no congressional authorization and no explanation or reason why we are staying in those being illustrated by Congress, and the multiple deployments rather than having the resources available so our service members can actually have a family life and also serve. There are issues like that that are part of this issue, and if we focus our on the school districts taking resources away from education, other education, I think misses the mark.
Representative Lush.
Well, thank you, and I don't want to get into a back and forth. I appreciate and absolutely respect your opinion, Mr. Diamond, but I would point out that the most costly and ongoing wars that this nation has had have been during the time of an all-volunteer force, when the military has been absolutely free to pull the trigger for as long as it wants to without any substantial pushback from the civilian population because they don't have a stake in it. So I would just offer that. That's my argument for accountability. But I don't mean to get into a back and forth because I respect your position.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Chair.
I think we're kind of getting off base here. I think the whole purpose of this bill is to allow the different branches to access into the school and set up and allow them to answer questions from the students. And many times those questions then are taken back home to the parents, and those questions and are discussed. I can recall many times my 34 years as a teacher and my 25 years in the military that the recruiters would come in and sit down with me and chat with me about students, and I'd always encourage them to reach out to the parents, reach out to the students, and give them the information that and answer questions that they have. And that's the whole purpose of this bill, is to allow access to, I know my high school where I teach, and also I represent where I used to teach, and then also I represent Stillwater and Chisago Lakes and Forest Lake, and they are very open to recruiters coming in and setting up during college fairs. We're talking about college fairs when the different colleges come in and talk about what they have to offer students. And this is what we're talking about here. And, again, this is going on to the Education Policy Committee. So,
all right. Thank you.
The captain here would like to maybe make a comment here, too.
Captain?
Okay.
State your name again, please.
Captain Young Yoon. So the gentleman before discussed taking resources. We really believe the bill provisions the resources to these educators. I feel like the educators and counselors need to be better formed of the military career options. I believe that some of the counselors and educators are working in the blind, not being able to provide all the information to our students for them to inform to better inform of them of all the available military career options. The gentleman before me also discussed the training, the onerous training difficulties. We believe that we could offset that by leveraging technology. We could have an easy format for webcasts, webinars, and we could actually go to the schools and do training in person. We have four recruiting companies across the Minnesota state. We recruit for both active duty Army Reserves, and so we could provide, we could provision the manpower to conduct these type of trainings, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Captain. Are there any questions? Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Chair Bliss. And I did want to thank the really everyone who's testified, and including the last gentleman. I did want to point out that there are really kind of two separate issues and pieces to this bill. And the access to our schools, I mean, you folks are much better suited to recruit students than any counselor is going to be because you have served. And your access to the schools, I'm completely, like, I'm on board with that, and I'm very supportive of that. And you have much more time to put into building those relationships and really explaining to students what their options are. But I did want to thank the previous testifier, too, because I think his point is a good one. And I completely agree with Representative Lesh that we certainly need to be recruiting. I'm just not sure if that gets you, you know, requiring extra training and requiring our counselors to do more than they do already. Right now, I know in one of the high schools in my district, the counselors get maybe two or three 15 to 20-minute sessions per student per year. So I know it doesn't seem like a lot from our side, but any additional thing that we're putting on their plate, you know, even if it's only one-hour training, that's time that they're not doing something else. And so there is a financial cost, and I do think that's a good point. And I'm sure that this will be discussed further in the Ed Policy Committee, and I would just encourage Chair Detmer and all of you to also advocate for more resources for our counselors so that they can do a better job with those resources, because as it is, the bill doesn't have any money attached, and there is a cost to our counselors doing that, and I just want to recognize that that's really important. So just want to kind of point out that they're really kind of separate things, and you guys really are the best, more than a counselor who's serving 150 kids who hasn't served our country. You folks are definitely better equipped to do a good job of that. So thank you for your service, and I'll say I have cousins and family members who were recruited in high school, and it was absolutely the best thing that could have happened for them. So thank you.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically, Representative Beckerfin echoed my concerns. I think the intent of this bill is really, really, really good. Now, I have a senior in high school now. He was presented with military options as well as others. A couple of his friends are going into active duty, which I applaud. But our counselors are under a lot of stress, and they have tremendous staffing ratios. And anything we can do to relieve them, I think, is an important conversation going forward.
Representative Look.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, testifiers, and Chair Detmer for this bill. I had an interesting email here about a month ago from a constituent. They wanted me to draft a bill to protect their child from the military recruiters. I take every email serious, and I did. I chatted with that person, and, you know, well, how would that work? Well, parents would give permission to the school to decide who could talk to their student. I said, well, would that go for college recruiters? Would that go for folks that would like to work, have their child come in those later years in high school work in a nursing home? Oh, I said, so, you know, I don't think I can go there. And but we ended on a cordial matter. But what that triggered was I've got four complete school districts, independent school districts in my district, and I chatted with each one of the superintendents and just asked them, is this something changed? You know, where did that email come from? And was very pleased to find that at least where the area I serve and represent, those superintendents are just absolutely tickled pink for you folks to show up with your people every opportunity that they have, because that issue of being able to explain to a young person what's available, and you got to start early, because as we know that they've served, there are a lot of things, if you don't do your homework and you can't meet that aptitude level, you don't get to go to those schools, you don't get to serve in those particular specialties. There's another element that I don't know if a college recruiter talks about this, but there's a huge amount of extremely sensitive my world was personnel reliability program, it isn't just academics. It's being a good citizen, because if you're not a good citizen and you've got some blemishes on your record, and those, that's the kind of thing that I know that our recruiters bring, it's not just about how well you do in school and how you pass your physical test. You have to understand that you can have things happen to you or do things as a youngster that can really limit your opportunities in the service. And so, again, I thank you. And I, it's just ironic here. This really makes sense, Chair Detmer. Thank you.
And Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Detmer, for bringing this forward. I just want to say that I support this bill and the opportunities that it provides to our students. We have a great junior ROTC program in one of my school districts, and they do a wonderful job. And I think that opening up the opportunities that this brings to our school district, sometimes it's just about getting the door open. And I think that if we have the proper people in places, which I'm sure that our armed services will provide, that the best resources are right there within those service officers that are doing recruiting. So anything we can do to close that gap, to maybe pick up some of that slack for the things that we're putting on our school counselors' plate, to have that backfilled by our veteran officers would be more helpful. Thank you.
And Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bliss. So I am on the Education Policy Committee, and I look forward to hearing it and discuss more about how that would work in terms of a counselor's burden. The question I have, though, I think really is for this committee, which is, can you help me understand the big picture of when is the best time and when are most people recruited to join the armed forces and to go into active duty? Is it at that graduation from high school, or is it something that evolves over, you know, the next years after that?
Captain Yoon?
Yes, Madam Representative. I would say it's the initial portion of the senior start of the high school, so fall, and then also the last semester, you're right, about the time of graduation.
Major Anderson, did you want to respond as well to that?
I could have gotten a different chair.
Yes, Chair, thank you. So, in my 18 months of doing this, it is clear to me that we have to talk to the students in high school. If we don't have the opportunity to talk to them in high school, they won't have that structured opportunity after high school where they can sit down with a recruiter. We miss a great opportunity as a country, as a state, if we don't talk to students in high school. And it doesn't have to be during senior year. I know the National Guard is allowed to enlist juniors. Most of the other service are only allowed to enlist seniors. But we can talk to them whenever. So having the opportunity to talk more often, I think, is beneficial to everybody.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you. Just to further that question, just another level again, just so I understand maybe the impact of what problem we're talking about, that it's that workforce, basically our military workforce, that it's the numbers are going down. Is that the correct impression that I'm taking away from this, and that this is about national security?
Major Nicholson?
Yes, sir. So the Marine Corps, we make our mission. So when I get told I have to enlist X amount of people from Minnesota, we do that. My concern is we miss a lot of opportunities. There's lost opportunities out there on students in this state that don't have the opportunity to make a sound decision based on service because of many factors, but that's my fear. And it's a struggle for us to make mission on a FY fiscal year basis. We do make it happen. However, I just think there's a lot of youth out there that would benefit, and I think we could do better.
Captain Yoon, did you want to respond to that at all?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Are there any more testifiers or people in the audience that would like to testify? All right, any further discussion?
Yes, sir. I do have a question. My name is First Sergeant Neil Baker.
Can you sit down and speak into the microphone, please? And state your name again, please.
My name is First Sergeant Emil Baker, and I'm Captain Yoon's senior advisor. I've been doing been a recruiter since 2002, so I've been doing this for a long, long time. One of the concerns that and this addresses is, as I've been going all over the country, and in Minnesota being my favorite state, by the way, I love this place. The concern that I run into is that the guidance counselors, and this goes to the question of the burden onto the guidance counselors. Guidance counselors in the schools will spend their time to do their research on a college, on a technical school, and they'll do everything they can to get every bit of information they can about that college and that technical school or whatever it might be. However, the time spent getting to know what the military can actually do and what the opportunities they can do, there's very little or none, because the preference is to send their kids to this college. And that's I don't know how to put it, but the idea that every kid should go to college, every kid should go to college, because that's what makes them successful. That's what the story is, and it starts from the gate. And so I think this goes after that, and that there's lots and lots of opportunities in all kinds of in all the branches, including college and technical schools. The opportunity and the time to train these guidance counselors can easily be taken by our recruiting commands across all the branches. There's times that the teachers sit down with their and they have a training session, a teacher's day in. There's summer days that they come in and do training and education. This is time that we can easily come in, step in for a few hours and do some training and education on what the military can offer these guidance counselors and the teachers. So to the next part is that the guidance counselor is usually the first person to get to talk to that kid about what they're going to do with their future, meaning the parents get their opportunity and their education and time is limited with the students. So the idea that, you know, I'm sitting down with Johnny to 15 to 20 minutes to talk about whatever it is that they're interested in doing in the future, they should have all of the knowledge and ability to present a fair, I don't know what the right way to put it, a fair representation of all the different opportunities that they have based on their interests and their ability to go to college, go to technical school, or join the workforce or military. That's my only point for this.
Thank you. Does anybody have a question for Mr. Baker? All right. Chair Detmer, any closing remarks?
Yes, and we've had a great discussion, and I know we'll be – I put the counseling training in there for a reason, and because I thought I would like to get it into the Education Committee and discuss those issues too. But my years as an educator and my years in the military, my wife and I have been blessed with twin sons that took the advantage of going to the Academy, West Point Academy. We have the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, Coast Guard Academy. So those are institutions that are just outstanding for our young people, the men and women coming out of our schools to be able to get into an institution like that. And then with a five-year commitment after graduation with your degrees, many go on to spend 20 years. Some get out after 5 years or 8 years or 9 years, maybe join up with the Guard or the Reserve. We want these young men and women to know what's available out there for them. And that's why it's really close to my heart that we allow the young men and women in our schools to learn as much as they can about the opportunities out there. And I'll just give you a heads up. I think we'll have another amendment when we get to Education Committee. So stay tuned.
All right. Chair Detmer moves that House File 2788 as amended be re-referred to the Education Policy Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 2788 as amended is referred to the Education Policy.
Thank you.
Next two items on the agenda is informational presentations of the Department of Military Affairs, capital projects, or bonding requests. Don Kerr will present the Department of Military Affairs bonding proposals. Thank you. Mr. Kerr, you can start when you're ready. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I do appreciate the committee's time today. I know this is an informational briefing only, but we're very interested in getting our message out about our bonding requirements to as many members as possible because it's quite important to us, and it's something we think we really want to make sure we address. I am going to try to get this done, though, in a very short period of time.
Thank you.
Bottom line, $25.578 million. That's distributed across six projects. They're on this, and they're copies of these slides in all of the members' packets. So we'll come back to the bottom line here in a little bit. I'm going to go quickly over some of the history of our funding that we've received from the legislature, where our locations are, how important it is to maintain this, and what our backlog is, and some of the other things that weigh into our decisions in the agency to make recommendations for bonding investment. First of all, we, of course, do have facilities all over the state, 65 of them in the current inventory, although we're in the process of divesting three of those at this time because we've already replaced them. But we do have a statewide presence, and we feel it's important to maintain that statewide presence. General Jensen mentioned in his opening comments that he intends to keep us relevant throughout the state of Minnesota, and there are a couple of reasons that that's important. Number one, we want to make sure that the National Guard is indeed community-based and that we have opportunities across the state of Minnesota for folks to serve in the National Guard, but we also need to have operations to function in the event of a natural disaster or other emergency so that we can be present and available to the community in support of them. In previous years, we have had a problem in that our maintenance appropriation was insufficient to cover the requirements that we had. And it was less money than we were receiving or were supposed to receive by law. I will thank the legislature 2 years ago for making a change to our base appropriation and increasing the amount in the maintenance appropriation of our budget. And that really is making the turn for us. We think that that's just about at the right spot now. But we do still have a little bit of pent-up demand, and we do have a large number of our facilities that are still in poor or failing condition, so to make up that maintenance backlog. And this is part of the challenge that we see. This is actually history of our bonding requests. So the red line is the amount of bonding that has been approved by the legislature. The blue line, the top one, is the amount of money that the agency has requested. The green line is the amount of money that the governors of various administrations have supported. And you can see there's invariably a delta between the amount authorized and the amount required, regardless of whose math you use. The one spike in 2012 was really one big significant project. We had a $20 million project in 2012 to construct the Education Center addition at Camp Ripley, and that's what that spike is. And we appreciate that. That's a wonderful facility, and that's really helping us in providing quality training to our service members and to other state agencies. A quick snapshot of the maintenance backlog, really big numbers. All agencies are going to show you really big numbers. What I'd like to point out is the amount of money that's in our poor and fair facilities. So obviously what we're trying to do is drive most of our poor facilities up into the fair, good, or excellent rating. I will note, though, some of that money is money we'll never need, because included in there are the three facilities that we've already decided we're going to divest of, and obviously it wouldn't make any sense to pour any more money into that. But we do have a significant maintenance backlog, and our objective is to move more of our facilities from the poor into the fair or good category so that we can continue to drive on. So once again, a recap of our total requirement. And again, those six projects around the state, our number one priority is, first of all, the St. Cloud Readiness Center, $4.4 million in state funds. And basically, all the way down the line, all of these will be matched with federal funding, dollar for dollar, in this year's response. So a couple of pretty big projects. St. Cloud is a big project. Rosemont's a big project. Those are both big buildings, and consequently, they cost a lot of money. I'm going to move on. I'm not going to go over each one of these individually, but fundamentally, this is where we're at. We have a system about how we know we have to go in and do major renovations in our facilities. Generally speaking, windows, roofs, and boilers all last from 20 to 30 years. And so our philosophy is that we really need to get into every one of our facilities every 20 to 30 years to upgrade them and bring them to code, change out the roofs, the windows, and the boilers. And that means we need to be doing 2 to 3 a year. And we have not been doing 2 or 3 a year. We've been falling behind because we haven't had the resources available. So these slides will look very similar in that when you talk about the detailing of what we're doing, We're updating electrical, mechanical, heat plants, windows, doors, in some cases roofs, not at all. Sometimes we have to do the roofs out of cycle. And we do some of our timing decisions based on some other factors. For example, the Rosemont project we're really trying to get done now because as soon as the Congress passes their budget, we'll be able to start construction on a new division headquarters that when it's completed in a couple of years will allow us to move the unit out of Rosemont. We'd like to take advantage of that gap, do the renovation before we move another unit into it. So that's kind of the timing on Rosemont. But each one of the armories has some detail here with what the facility looks like and what the things that we're trying to do in the projects are.
Mr. Kerr?
Yes, sir.
Representative Lesh?
So Mr. Chair, I was going to ask a question, but then I see it's right here in the top. These look like matches on all these, federal and state. So that's all the way down the line. We get state money, we'll get it full up 100% dollar-for-dollar match from the feds.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. For armories are supported 50-50 state-federal. So, but the trick is we do have to have the state money available. I can't spend federal money on a property until I have the state dollars there to do that match. There are some facilities that are 100% federally supported. Strangely, most of the facilities at Camp Ripley, which is a state-owned installation, because they support the federal mission directly, most of those facilities are authorized 100% federal funding. So most of the money that we get from the state budget doesn't get spent at Camp Ripley. It gets spent out in the communities.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But in general, the rule is if you're talking about an armory, we're getting matched dollar for dollar. Is that
absolutely
right? Okay. Thank you.
Proceed.
All right, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to go in. This kind of ties into what we're talking about here. We want to make the committee and all members of the legislature aware that a few years ago we actually had to do a report to the Congress because they were getting so many requests for this pent-up demand. We're not the only ones in this boat, obviously, that they wanted to do a full system assessment, and they called that the Readiness Center Master Transformation Plan. So we went through this rather rigorous process to determine what our needs were, but what the plan really forced us to do was to take a long view of what facilities we needed to continue to support, where we needed to have them to make sure that we had the right facilities in the right places so that we weren't spending money that we really couldn't afford to sustain. The drive from the national level was to try to push down the number of readiness centers that were being supported in the states. They would prefer that we go down to one or two in the state. The challenge that we have with that is obviously it puts a great burden on our service members to then have to drive to wherever they're going to drill. There are some economies of scale there, but we didn't feel that was the right way. However, as we did go through the analysis, we found that there were some opportunities for us to do some consolidations and in some cases some divestitures. So this slide shows the communities in which we are planning at this time to do some consolidations. And in some cases, that means divesting of one of the facilities while enhancing the remaining. In some cases, it means divesting of the two existing facilities and building one new structure to replace. And I think that gets me to the last slide. The relevance of that is just to really kind of share with you that we have a massive amount of staff work into the planning that surrounds what our requirements are to maintain our facilities around the state. Our current ask is for $25.5 million in the bonding bill for those six projects. And, Mr. Chair, I will submit myself to questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kerr. And I think how many of you were able to take that trip up to Ripley? Okay. That was with the State Government Finance Committee, and it was part of this committee, too. And it was a good time for us to get up there and see the facility. And But are there any questions for Mr. Kerr here? Any questions? Like always, Mr. Kerr, you do an excellent job getting the information out from the TAG. And feel free. I know you usually I see you sitting in on our committees on a daily basis, also with state government finance, and we will continue. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We're going to be hearing from Ben Johnson next week. So he's going to have the main stage next week with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And please leave the Veterans Affairs PowerPoint in your folder. We'll utilize that next Monday. Are there any questions? If not, we made it through our first committee, and this committee is